We begin the current daf Masechta Sanhedrin of Tezvav. Begin on the bottom of the Yudalim base, the second line up from the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara continues explaining the halacha of our Mishnah of this parak, opening up this Masechta regarding how many judges are necessary for certain court cases, or certain evaluations. So on that, the Mishnah said, Ha'arachin v'chulu, the erich value, ha'metaltlin, which are movable, there it requires three Tamid Chachamim to evaluate that assessment of the erich value. Now, the Gemara wonders on this terminology, Maya Rochen Hamatatlan, what does that mean, the Erech value of movable items? The Halacha of Erechen does not apply to utensils, to movable items. It only pertains, as the Torah says, to a human being, to a person, which the Torah gives certain set amounts according to the years and the gender of that person. So what is Erechen Hamatatlan? So Amrav Gidla Marav, he explains, it's Ba'ima Erech Kleze Alites. When somebody says, the Erech value of that vessel is incumbent upon me. What does that mean? So the Gemara explains to Amrav Gidla Marav that he said, as we continue to have Tezvav Amar Alav, Ha'ayma Erech Kleze Alav. Someone says the Erech value of this vessel is on me. Nisen Damav. He has to give the actual monetary value of that Kli as it's worth. Now, in my time, what's the reason? First of all, Erechen doesn't apply to Kli. And moreover, Erechen doesn't go on intrinsic value. It goes on based on the Torah's arbitrary value based on age and gender. So on that, Rav Gidla explains, because Adam Yedeya She'ein, a person knows that it doesn't pertain to say a terminology of Erech L'Kli, because there is no set amount of Erechin for a Kli in the Torah. And therefore, because he did say it, V'gamar V'amar L'Shem Dam, it must have been that he had concluded and his intention was to say it for the actual monetary value. Now the reason for this is, as the Gemara tells elsewhere, as in Erech and Daf Hey, a person is not Maitzit Dvar V'Vatal, a person doesn't say anything for no reason. Although he said Erech and he meant the Dam, and therefore he's going to be obligated in the monetary value. Mishum Hachi, Nais and Dam, that's why he gives the monetary value, and it's regarding that that the Mishnah is telling us. When he has to give the actual monetary value of an item to Hekdish, although he used the term Arachin, but you didn't say it for nothing, you really meant the Dumim value, and it's for that that you need to have three assessors. Now the Gemara asks, but Hai Arachin Amatatlan, but the terminology that the Mishnah uses sounds like that the Arachin Amatatlan, the actual Erech is movable, but according to Rav Gidla's interpretation, Arachin Shel Matatlan Bibayle, it should have said, the Erech value of movable items. Not that the Erechin is movable. No, it's the Erech of movable items. Says the Gemara, it's not, yeah, you should amend it. Erechin Shemel Tatlin. It's not Erechin Hametatlin. It's the Erechin of movable items. When you say Erech Kli Ze'alai, so regarding that, you have to give the monetary value. That has to be assessed by three judges. That's one interpretation. Rav Chisda Amar Avimi, he gives a second interpretation. He says, it's talking about B'matvis Metatlin La'arechin. It's talking about with someone is using the metatlin to pay for his erichin. In other words, where somebody says, erkoyolai, that person, and the Torah gives a certain value for whatever age that person is on me. So now he becomes responsible to give that set amount to Hekdish, according to that person's age. And moreover, the one who promised that erichin value has movable items. And he says that these movable items should be to pay for my erichin vow that I took. So now those things now have sanctity to them. Now he doesn't want to give the actual movable item to Hekdish, he wants to come to redeem it. That's what the Mishnah is telling us. You need to have three judges to remove that item from Hekdish. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, if that's the interpretation, then Hai Erechin HaMetaltlin, a similar question, then why does the Mishnah say Erechin HaMetaltlin, Metaltlin Shel Erechin Mibayli, the opposite term of how it said regarding Rav Gidl, that I should say Erechin Shemotatlin? According to Rav Chizkiya's interpretation, they say mitaltlin shel arochin. It's the movable item of the erichin. I mean, the person took a regular erich vow, then there's mitaltlin of that erich vow, which he had said should pay for it. That's the term it should say. So the Gemara says, yeah, you should read it mitaltlin shel arochin, not arochin hamitaltlin. Right? That means the movable items of the erich. When the person comes to redeem those things, he needs to have three judges to be able to assess the appropriate value to pay that erich vow to Hekdish. He gives a third interpretation. He says, it's talking about where somebody says that my value is on me. It's a certain age, and he has to give the erich vow to Hekdish. Now, but he didn't pay the erich vow. So the kohen comes to the treasurer of the Hekdish, comes to collect, get collateral to pay up that debt. And he finds by this person who took the erich vow, metaltalin, and that's what the Mishnah is telling us, Ha'arachin, meaning when a person takes a regular erva of a person, and then they're coming to collect from him movable items, that's collected b'shleisha with three assessors. Whereas the Mishnah told us karkois basar, but when it comes to land, that's assessed with 10 people. Now, so we have three interpretations in the halacha of the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, Amalei Rav Acha Madiftil Ravin, it says, Bishleim alafukim hekdesh, says, I very well understand if you're coming to remove something from hekdesh, which are the first two interpretations, that of Rav Gidl and Rav Chizda. So I would understand why be'in and shleisha, why over there you would need to have three judges, because since these things already have a sanctity of hekdesh, whether because it's the erichin of metaltlin or the metaltlin of erichin, so you can't remove it until you first evaluate with three assessors, because it's that of hekdesh. Elali yuli lehekdesh, but to bring something into hekdesh, which is the case of Bavo when they're coming to collect from somebody where he owes for his erval, shleisha lamali, why do you need to have three judges over there? And when you're taking away from hekdesh, but to give to hekdesh? On that Amalei, he responds to him, what do you mean? Svaru, it's logical. Mali yuli, mali afuki, what's the difference bringing into hekdesh or taking away from hekdesh? Afuki, my time, why you understand when you're taking away from hekdesh? Dimatai, because maybe it's going to be an error and you're going to be taking inappropriately from hekdesh. So he says, iyuli nami, bringing towards hekdesh is the same thing. Dimatai, maybe they're going to make an error and they're going to give to hekdesh more than the value, which is also inappropriate. And therefore, whether Rebbe Vo's interpretations is also correct, that's not a difficulty, because either way, we don't want to do something that's not appropriate, whether giving or taking from hekdesh. Now, the Mishnah said that regarding this halacha, when we're speaking about of hekdesh, that let's say hekdesh of a behemoth, that you need to have three judges, he said that one of the three has to be a kohen. So Amalei Rav Papa Labahi asked, Bishlam Rabbi Huda, we understand his opinion very well, because Heindich Sev Kohen, that's why it says within the parsha of hekdesh, which one of them was what we were discussing regarding Erechin, regarding Erech, it also talks about the term of kohen in regards to redeeming that element of hekdesh. So by hekdesh, redeeming hekdesh, it says kohen. So that's why we understand why one of them, one of the three judges, has to be a kohen. El Rabbanon, but according to the Rabbanon, who say that you don't need to have a kohen, kohen lama luhu, why does it say the terminology of kohen over there regarding the redemption of the hekdesh item? So the Gemara Kasha, it's difficult. Why does it mention kohen when it doesn't have to be a kohen according to Rabbanon? Now the Mishnah continues, says, where's harka kohes? But the evaluation of redeeming a land of karka from hekdesh to back to a commoner's hand, that's tisha b'kohen. That requires 9 regular people and a kohen for some total of 10 people. So the Gemara Sminan Amelie, where do we know this halacha from? So Amar Shmuel says, because Asara Kahanim Ksuvim B'Parasha, as we established this in the previous daf, there's three different parashas, that of Arachin, Hektish of like a Behema, and then Hektish of Karka, where it says three times the word Kahanim by Arachin, three times by Hektish of Behema, and 4 times by Karka, for a sum total of 10 times. So Chad Legufe. So we understand why one time it says the term Kayin, to say the actual halacha that requiring the redemption of the land, it requires a Kayin. But what's with all the other 9 times? Hanach avamir acharmir, so the other times are, you have an exclusionary term after already a previous exclusionary term, because each time it says the term kain, it's excluding a non-kain, which sounds like a kain and not a yisrael. Now the halacha is, v'emir acharmir el rabbis, when you have a double exclusion, it's actually excluding the exclusion, which tells you that you actually should increase. Dafel etes yisrael ve'echad kain. Already said one time kohen, we know it's kohen, not yisrael. Why does it keep on excluding? The exclusions are not exclusions, they're actually inclusions, which tells us that the other 9 could be yisraelim and doesn't have to be a kohen, makes a total of 1 kohen and 9 yisrael. But Maskevel Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Nosson, he asked, wait a second, that shouldn't be 9 yisraelim and 1 kohen. Eima chamisha kahanim v'chamisha yisraelim. You should actually say that we should need 5 kohanim and 5 yisraelim, because yes, the first time it mentions kainim is to tell you the halacha itself that you need to have a kain. The second time it says kainim, yeah, that's mir achar mir, that's actually coming to include a yisrael. But then the third time it says it again, then it is necessary to tell you that you need to have a kain, because since you already included as a ribui the second time it says a mir, meaning when the first time it says a mir, it's saying kain, not yisrael. When it says a mir after that first mir, that includes a yisrael. So then when it says the third time kain, well, that's coming to say, actually, for the halacha itself. Because that's not a mir achamir anymore. The second one was a mir achamir, which made a ribuy. But then the third time is actually going to be a real mir. So therefore, that should tell us that one is specific, and the next one is a mir achamir. Then the one after that is a real mir. The one after that is a mir achamir. So it should be 5 and 5, not 9 and 1. So Zigmund Kasha, that's a difficulty. Why is it that the halacha is that you could have 9 Yisraelim and 1 kain? Now the Mishnah continued that v'adam k'yetzbe, and the halacha of redeeming a person from hektish has the same halacha like land, where just like by land we said you need to have 9 Yisraelim and 1 Kayan to evaluate it. Same thing is by the redemption of the evaluation of a man from hektish. Now the Gemara says, adam k'yetzbe, could a person be sanctified? On that Amr Bavo, he says, ba'imr d'me'alai, someone where a person says that my value, whatever I'm worth, is owed to hektish. And it's regarding that that it has to be evaluated, that he has to give that value to hektish. The time like Linda Bryce, the Ha'imr Dimei Alive, someone says that my monetary value is incumbent upon me to Hekdesh. Shaman Oisi Ke'evet Animka Bishrok, they evaluate him like a slave that's sold in the marketplace. And Ve'evet Iskish Laka Kars, the halachas of slaves are compared to land, as the Pasuk says, Mika Chafei Vesna Chaltam Oisim. We use a term of inheritance, like of land, in the terminology of an Evet. So since a person being sold, a person who has his value to Hekdesh is like an Evet HaNemek B'Shuk, and the Evet HaNemek B'Shuk is like Karka. Just like Karka, when you're evaluating that to be paid to that, you need to have 9 and 1 Kain, so too, by a person, you need to have 9 and 1 Kain. Now, related to this, however, Bayer Abavin had the following question. Sar Ha'emid Ligazes, regarding here that's ready to be shorn off, to be cut off, and he sanctified his here, and now he's coming to redeem it, because as we said, according to its value, because actually, you can make, it has value, the hair of a person, because they can make the mesh for a sieve, or of a cloth, or of a hairband. They could do certain things with the hair. So the question is, bekama. Now, how many of assessors are necessary to be used to evaluate his hair that he wants to give that value to Hekdesh? As the Gemara explains, the question is, kagaz is dummy? Do we say that since it's ready to be cut off, we consider it as if it's cut off, and therefore we view it as a movable item? And as we said regarding hektish, by movable, it's ubishloisha. You only need 3 assessors. Or do we view it still as attached to the person? And just like we said, a person is like land that requires 10, so to over here, you would require 10. So the Gemara says, Tashma, come in here. You can prove it from the following brisa. Brisa says, Hamakdish is avdo. If someone sanctifies his slave, ein mo'elim boy. So there's no treason of me'ila, and the reason for that is because, like we said before, the slave is compared to karka, and there's no halach of me'ila by karka, as the Gemara Masechta Me'ila learns it from Gzeir Shava Chet Chet from Truma. So therefore, there's no me'ila if someone misappropriates the slave who's now owned by Hektish. I mean, he says Moilin b'sayrei, that you actually could commit me'ila if you misappropriate the utility of his hair, because his hair is not like his body, and then rather it's considered like a regular movable item of Hektish, which there is the halach of me'ila. Now, says the Gemara of Akaimlan, now we had established that their machlekes was the Besayre Ha'amid Ligaz's plea, that they were actually disagreeing specifically regarding a case where the hair is ready to be shorn off, meaning it's huge hair of growth, and it would be normally cut off in that state. That's where the machlekes is. It says the Gemara, so we answered our question, that actually our question is a machlekes tanoim. According to the Tanakhama, who says that there's no me'ila even in the hair of the Eved, is because he considers the hair, even if it's ready to be cut off, as still attached to the slave. And therefore, the same thing would be regarding the redemption of a person's hair, would require 10 assessors, because it's considered part of the person, which requires 10. Whereas according to Reb Shimon, he considers it as shorn off, and therefore there's me'ila, meaning he considers it as movable, so therefore it would only require 3 assessors as a movable item of Hekdesh. Now says the Gemara, Nemahani Tanoi, Kandi Tanoi. Let's say that this Machlekes Tanoim is the same as the following Machlekes Tanoim. That not like we learned in the Mishnah, in other words, it parallels as we learned in the Mishnah Masechta Shavuos. Remeir Aimer, he says, Yesh Dvarim Shehinka Karka, there are things that are like land, meaning because they're attached to the land, but Ve'in Kakarka. But they don't have the halacha like land, rather like of movable items. But Ve'in Chacham Maidenloi, but says the Mishnah, the Chacham do not agree to Remeir. Now, Ketzad, what's the case? Says the Mishnah, Eser Gefonim Tu'unus Mesatir Lechem. Let's say someone claims to the defendant, he says, well, I handed over to you 10 laden grapevines, and that's how much you owe me. V'halo Eimer, and the other person says, the defendant says, no, Eine Lechemish, you only had given me 5 laden grapevines, not 10. So says the Mishnah, Remeir Mechayev, Remeir requires the defendant to swear regarding the rest, which is commonly known as Meidim Miktis HaShavua, Meidim Miktis HaTayni Yishava. Someone admits to part, but he denies the rest, where the guy's claiming 10, he's saying, no, not 10, 5. So if you admit to part of the claim, you have to swear for the rest. Now, although the halacha is that we're not nishban al-kakayis, you don't swear an oath regarding land if, let's say, you admit the partial of the claim or not, as the Gemara teaches in Shavuos Dan Membeis Mebeis. Here says Remeir, since the grapevines do not need the land, because they're ready to be picked, to be plucked, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain this from Rabbi Yisrael Chanina in their Machlekes. So we really view it as if it's picked, and therefore it's metaltlin and not karka, and therefore moed mitzvah taina in metaltlin items, you have to swear. They disagree. They say kolam achubal karka areka karka. Now whatever is attached to the ground, it's considered like ground, and therefore just like you don't swear on ground, you're not going to swear on this, even though you moed mitzvah taina. Now, V'amr Beis Rabbi Chanin, he had explained that Ba'anavim ha'oimnes li'batzer askinan. The case that they're disputing is regarding grapes that are ready to be picked. The machlekes is Marsa v'rmei holds kibitzurus damin. Therefore, we consider it as if it's already picked, and therefore you're going to have to swear on a partial admission because it's like a movable item. Whereas a Marsa v'betachacham held that no lav kibitzurus damin is not like it's already picked. So that seems to parallel the same thing. Here, that's ready to be cut off, but it's attached to the person. Grapes are ready to be picked, but it's attached to the ground. Do we view it as already, as if it's picked and metatlin? Or do we view it as if it's still attached, and that seems to parallel the same previous machlekes? Tosfos Gemara says, "Loi, no, not necessarily. Afilu tamei Reb Meir, you could even say Reb Meir who said in this Mishnah that we view the grapes as if they're bitzuris, as if they're already picked, because you could say that he would agree to the other opinion in the previous price. Why? Because adkan lekam Reb Meir hasam, only over there do we find Reb Meir saying the halacha over there by grapes. Because kol kama deshavkalu, the longer you leave the grapes on the vine, mechish kachshi, it gets weaker, it gets ruined. You got to pick it before it deteriorates. And therefore, he says that if it's ready to be picked, we view it as if it's already picked. Avasayre, but a person's here, kol kama deshavkalu, the longer you leave it on the person's head, ishbuchi meshabech, people have beautiful long hair. So therefore, you could say that even the Kodrit Meir, by here, he would agree to the Rabbanah, the previous Brisa, and he would not consider it as Betzuris, as picked. Rather, he would consider it as still attached to the person, which would require 10 assessors. And if it's not a Raya that the Machlik is parallel, you could say that there's a differentiation between grapes and between here. The Gemara continues the halachas of our Mishnah, which said, Dina Nefashis, regarding capital punishment, we said that requires 23 judges, Chulu, etc., which said that if an animal sodomizes, has relations with a human being, there also the animal has to be punished by a court of 23 judges. So the Gemara says, Kapasig Vatani, the Mishnah unspecifies and just says a blanket statement regarding a raiva, an animal that sodomizes, that requires 23 judges. And therefore, the Mishnah is Loishna, does not differentiate between an ox that is Reva, that is sodomizes a person that's a Zachar, that's a male. V'loishna Reva, neither does it make a differentiation between if the ox sodomizes a woman that's a Nekeva, that's a female. Where we learn out from Psukim, both these halachas, later on the Nundalim Abeis, that there's halacha that the animal gets stoned. Which the Tanya of the Mishnah is saying that, but that halacha, that execution has to be with 23 judges. Now, that asks the Gemara, Bishlam Reiva Nekeva, we understand when the animal, the Reiva is the one who's doing the act, and then there's the one who's receiving. So we understand when the animal is sodomizing a female, where there it says that you require 23 judges, because the Chassid of the Pasuk says, Meyikra, Vaharakta Se'isha Vesabahema, you have to kill the woman and the animal that she committed the act of bestiality with, where there's a comparison in the pasuk between the animal and the woman, which the halacha of the woman, we know capital punishment as we taught in the Mishnah, is with 23. So the same thing applies to the behemoth as it compares it to the woman. But where do we know when the animal sodomizes the man, that there we require a court of 23 judges? So the Gemara says, because the Chassid says the pasuk in Shemais. It says, "Kol sheichiv in behemah mais yumas, whoever lays with relations with an animal will surely be killed." Which from there the Gemara teaches in Perek Arba Mises regarding the halacha of reiva zacher, regarding when an animal sodomizes the man. Where it teaches us that im eina inyan l'sheichiv, if it doesn't pertain to when a man is the one who's laying with the animal, meaning when he comes and he does the act on the animal, because actually a different pasuk already teaches us this, in V'yikra Chav, it says, Isha Sheyitin Shechav Toi, a man that he'll put his laying in, meaning when he's doing the active, not the passive role, so we don't need this pasuk to teach us when he's laying with the animal. So therefore says the Gemara, Tenei Inyan L'Nishkev, so actually teaches us when he's being lain on, meaning when the animal comes on the man. Now, V'afki Rachmonim B'loshan Sheichim, but then why does the Torah in this pasuk use the terminology that the man's laying with the animal when actually the animal's laying with the man? It's lakushe nishkev l'sheichev, because it's coming to compare when the man is being laid on to when he's laying on the animal. Because we want to compare it, although in this case he's the passive role, he's the receiver, we want to consider him as if the same as when he's laying with the animal. What does that teach us? Mashaichib, just like when he comes onto the animal, who behem toibes mishleisha, him and the animal require 23 judges, as we learn out from the pasuk vesbeha abehimataraygu, that you kill the animal, where then it compares the animal to the person, where just like when the person gets killed, it requires 23 judges, so to the animal. So afnishkiv, so too, when the animal comes on the person and he's doing the passive role, is also, that's why I use the term of sheikhiv to say that the nishkiv will have the same halacha over there, to who be'emtei be'esem eshleish, that him and the animal will require 23 judges, not only when a woman who generally does the passive role with the animal requires 23 judges for the animal, but even when the man plays that role, is also going to be 23 judges. Now the Mishnah then continued in saying other halachas to require 23 judges is shar haniskol be'esem eshleisha, the stoned ox, which is after that he went and killed a person, so the ox has to be stoned, that requires a court of 23 judges. Shenem, like it says in the pasuk in Shemais, hashor yisokel v'gam ba'olav yumas, the ox gets stoned and the owner also dies. Now, says the Mishnah, k'misas abayon k'chmisas asher, what's it saying, the ox gets stoned and the owner dies? It's coming to compare the death of the owner with the death of the ox. Just like the death of the owner, a human, requires 23 judges, so too the death of the ox. Now, on this halacha, Amalei Bai L'Rav, he asks, mimai d'hai v'gam ba'olav yumas, how do you know to say that when the pasuk is saying, and also the owner dies? It's coming to teach us the halacha the Mishnah told us, l'kemisas ba'am kachmisas asher huda asa. It's coming to tell us that, to compare it, to say just how the owner dies is to 23 judges, so too is the death of the ox. However, he asks, as we continue to Medbeis, emalik talu huda asa. Actually, maybe say that it's coming to tell us that the owner gets the death penalty and he's obligated in death. How could you go ahead and exclude the pasuk from its literal translation to say, no, it's just saying it to compare it to the death of the ox, that just like there's 23, here's also 23. Maybe he says no, or contrary, that it's actually coming to say the ox dies and the owner dies. And that he answers, he says, Imkem, but if that's the case, then lichta v'gam ba'olav, felishtik. Then it should have just said, and also the owner, and been silent. And we would have known, and also the owner dies. Why does it say yumas? That it's really superfluous just to say, to compare it to the halacha of the shor haniskol. On that he asked back, however, you need the term yumas. It's not superfluous. And that's because you needed to tell you that the Torah would be punishing the death penalty for the owner in its generic death penalty, which is generally chenek, which is strangulation. And actually, not that you should say that begam ba'olav, if you would just be silent, to say that the owner gets the death penalty of stoning. As the Gemara says, ikas rechman ha'chi, had the Torah only written begam ba'olav and left out yumas, have amina meskila. Then I would have thought to say that the owner gets the same as the ox, which is stoning. That's why we have to say yumas, but maybe it's really that he gets the death penalty and not just to compare it to the shor haniskol. And that answers the Gemara, no, beskilas l'kataydich. Would you entertain to say that you need yumas to say that he doesn't get skila? But what, without that you would have thought to say that he gets stoned? How can you say that? Katal ihu, when a person himself kills another person, all he gets is besayif. He gets the death penalty of by being beheaded by the sword, as the Gemara tells us later on, the Beis and Mebeis, that a Ritzeach gets killed by the sword. So Memoinai, when his money, when his ox kills a person, you're going to say Beskila? That he gets the most severe penalty from them all? How could his punishment be worse than when he himself murders, than when his ox murders? On that aspect, Abaya, no. But Dilma Haida Kasar Achmanu Yumas, no. Maybe this that the Torah is saying Yumas is La'akule Ilave. It's actually coming to make it more lenient for him. Meaning, lafuki misayif lechenik. You're right, when he himself kills, he gets the death penalty of sayif by the sword. And the Torah is telling you, begam ba'olav yumas, yes, to get the death penalty, not to compare it to that, that just like he needs 23, so too the ox needs 23. And you're right. Of course, we wouldn't entertain to say that without it he would get skila. But it's that we would have thought without saying yumas, we would have thought to say that he would get saif, like when a regular person murders, so too when his ox murders. And it's actually downgrading him and saying that no, it's okay. Since he himself didn't murder, he doesn't get saif, but he gets chenek. And explains Abaya. Ha nicha, I would understand that, yes, like the Mishnah is uprooting the literal translation of the pasuk and not explaining that it's actually saying that the owner himself gets the death penalty of chenek, and rather just to compare it to the halachas of shor haniskol, l'man da'amar chenek chamer. Only according to the opinion that holds that strangulation is more severe than the death penalty of by the sword. Whereas the Gemara teaches us later on, the Afnon Mebeis, that there is such an opinion. So therefore, then you could ask, well, how could you say if he himself kills, he gets killed by the sword? And if his ox killed, he's going to get something more severe of chenek? So I would understand, okay, there, I would understand that's why the Chacham had to say it can't be. It would have to be talking about just to compare it to the laws of Sharon Niskel. But Elamando, I'm a chenek kill, but he says, my question does pertain to the one who holds that strangulation is more lenient than the punishment of killed by the sword. So Michael Emma. So what are you going to say? Maybe say that it's not here to be compared just to say Kamisa Sabayon Kachmisa Asher. Maybe it's really coming to say that an owner, because of his negligence, he caused the death of another person. You won't get Saif, but you'll get Chanek. And that answers the Gemara, no, Loi Sakataituch. You cannot entertain to say that an owner will get the death penalty, any death penalty, because of his ox killing a person. Because the Chassid, it says the Pasuk in Shemais, Im Kaifer Yushas Alav, regarding the Shar HaNiskel, regarding the ox that killed another person, it says, and if it's going to be placed on the owner of that ox, the payment of redemption for having killed another person, where he has to pay the family the value of the person who died. Now, and that says the Gemara, but if you were entertained to say that the owner is really obligated in the death penalty for what his ox did, but Vaksiv the Pasuk says, you're not allowed to take atonement money for a murderer. Someone has to get killed, he can't pay his way out. So if you're saying that he's supposed to get killed, how can the Pasuk say that he could pay Kaifer atonement money and redeem himself if you can't pay your way out of the death penalty? That asked the Gemara, no, other rabbi, to the contrary. It actually feeds into my question. Mishum hi gufa, because of this question itself, that you should not say that the Torah wrote loisikhu kaifer, so therefore the owner, the ox, should get killed. On that, the Torah writes, no, it does say regarding when this ox kills another person, but nasan pidyanavshe, that he could redeem himself, to tell you, Kotel Ihu, when he himself murdered another person, yeah, that's what the Pasuk says, then it's not enough with paying his way out of this, he's got to get killed. But that's what the Pasuk was explicitly telling you, Kotel Shire, when this ox kills, that, yeah, Lifrig Nafshe B'mamayna, he could redeem himself with money, but if he doesn't pay Kaifer money, then he would be obligated in the death penalty of Chenek. So therefore, back to the question, why can't you say that it's literally translated in the Pasuk that V'gambal of Yumas, that he's going to die, a lower death penalty, but he'll get it. And this that it says in Kevin Yusha says, yes, if you want, you could pay your way out of it, but if not, then you get the death penalty. But not to like the halacha of the Mishnah, it's saying just to compare it to that you need 23 judges by the stoning of the ox. Elam Chizkia, rather Chizkia says, Avchein Tana de Bechizkia, so it was torn to Bryce in the Shiva of Chizkia, he says, because Amakra, the Pasuk says in Midbar, and this will tell us why you cannot interpret the Gambal of Yumas, that the owner gets killed for the act of murder of its ox, because the Pasuk says, Mais Yumas Hamaka, the one who hit will be surely killed, Reiteach, who is a murderer, he killed another person, which teaches us, Al Ritzichas Atahargai, for his own murder, we kill the murderer, the Atahargai Al Ritzichas Shabbat, we don't kill him for the murder of his ox. And therefore, it's clear that you can't say the Gambal of Yumas is for the when this ox kills another person, and that's why it's extra, as the Mishnah teaches us, to compare it to the laws of the Shara Niskel, just like a person being killed, but not in this case that he's going to be killed, requires 23 judges, so too by the execution of the Shara Niskel, also requires 23 judges. Now the Gemara continues on the related discussion regarding the death of an ox. Ibaihu, the following question. Shar Sinai, regarding an ox that came close to Har Sinai at the time of the giving of the Torah when the Divine Presence was still on the mountain, where the Torah tells us, Im Behema, Im Ish, Lo Yichyeh, if an animal or a person will come near the mountain, they will not survive. So the question is, Bekama, how many judges were required to judge the animal that ended up touching the mountain to kill that ox? And the Gemara's question is, because mi gamer shom mi dairis oiloi, do we learn out a temporary halacha of the killing of an ox from a future generational halacha of killing the ox? Meaning, just like we say with the Shara Niskel that requires the death of the ox 23 judges, do we say the same thing applies by this one time in history thing of touching the mountain, or no? So the Gemara touched him out, coming here, the Tani Rambam Bar Yechezkel taught the following brisa. Pasuk says in Shemais, in Behema im Ish lo yichya, whether it be an animal or a man, if he touches the mountain, he will not live. Which teaches us the following Hekesh, Ma Ish b'chav gimel, just like a man, where it's obvious to us, because even at that time in history, they already had judges from the times of Yisra and onward, where he established the court system. So therefore, it was required for capital punishment to kill a person with 23 judges. Av Behema b'chav gimel, so too, with an animal, if he touched the mountain, was to be executed only with 23 judges. Now the Gemara continues with the halacha, the Mishnah, that says, Hari v'hazei v'chulu. The Mishnah talks about certain types of wild animals, a lion and a wolf, etc., where the Tanakhama says that requires 23 judges to kill those animals, just like we said by the Shahar Niskel. But Rabbi Elazar said, no, kol ha-koydim zacha. Whoever merits, go ahead and kill these wild animals. You don't need 23 judges to kill the animal. Now, there's a machlekes in Rabbi Elazar's opinion. Amr Shlakish, he says, this said Rabbi Elazar says that whoever is first to kill the animal merits. Says Rish Lakish, that's only behusha hemisoi. That's only if this wild animal had already killed somebody. Because Rabbi Elazar is going back on the opinion of the Tanakhama. Tanakhama was saying if a wild animal kills a person, so Tanakhama said you need 23 judges to kill the wild animal. On that, Rabbi Elazar was saying that no, if this wild animal killed a person, whoever could shoot the animal, whatever it is to neutralize an animal, he merits first. You don't need 23 judges. But says Rish Lakish, loy hemisu loy. If the wild animal never killed the person, then you're not allowed to just go ahead and kill the wild animal. Says the Gemara, Alma, so you see Rish Lakish is kasava that he holds, yesh lehen tarbis, that you could tame a wild animal, and one is permitted to have and own such a wild animal because you could teach it not to harm, you could train it. Therefore, v'yesh lehen bailim, in other words, therefore that the name of the owner is designated on this wild animal, and it's not considered like an ownerless animal. And therefore, it's forbidden to kill this animal if it never killed anyone. But if it killed a person, yes, that's what Rabbi Elazar was saying, then it's obvious now, and you could tell that this animal cannot be tamed, and that's why it killed a person. And therefore, you don't have to go ahead, like the Tanakhama said, to judge it. Whoever gets there first could kill it, but that's only if it ever killed a person. If it never did, then we say that, no, it's a tamed animal, and you're not allowed to kill it. Whereas Rabbi Yechanan, he disagrees with Rish Lakish. He says, no, even if this wild animal never killed a person, Rabbi Elazar says, whoever could go ahead and kill it, more power to him. And that's what Rabbi Elazar is telling to the Tanakhama. You said that it's only if the wild animal kills a person and then you need to have 23 judges to judge it. Says Rabbi Elazar, I say that even if this wild animal never killed a person, you're allowed to kill it and whoever gets their first merits, and of course for sure if it killed a person, you're allowed to neutralize it. But even if not, you're allowed to go ahead and kill the animal. Says the Gemara, Alma, Kesavar, Ein Lem Tarbis, Ein Lem Bailim. So obviously you see Rabbi Yechon holds that you cannot tame these wild animals, and therefore they have, it's like there's no ownership on these wild animals, and we consider it like a ownerless animal, and the reason is because you can never train it properly and tame it to the extent that it's not going to be a danger, and therefore whoever could kill it first is allowed to kill it. Now the Gemara asked on Rish Lakish's interpretation from Tznan Lintnar Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer, he says, Kalakoidin Lahargan Zacha, the words that he said was, whoever is first to kill the wild animal, he merits. So says the Gemara, Bishlam L'Rabbi Yechanan, so we can understand the current Rabbi Yechanan, Lamai Zacha, what does it mean that whoever kills it first merits, which sounds like that he's going to gain? Zacha L'Iron, whoever kills the animal could get the bounty, could go ahead and get the dead animal and could use the hide, the skin of the animal, because since we said there's no Bailam, even if someone owns it, we said that, no, you can never tame these animals. So whoever kills it could use it and he could get the hide. But El Rish Lakish Lamai Zacha, but Kondrish Lakish, what does it mean that the one who kills it first, that he gets, that he gains? But Kivin Shehem Misui, we explained that Rish Lakish is explaining Rabbi Elazar's halacha, it's only talking about if this animal, this wild animal, had already killed a person. And on that, the Rabbanah are saying, according to Rabbi Elazar, that you don't have to judge the animal by a court. You could take the law in your own hands and kill the wild animal. But if it's Toma that the wild animal already killed a person, so Shavini Rabbanan commanded Gomer Dinayu. So essentially, according to Rabbi Elazar, the Rabbanan considered this wild animal as if the verdict was already passed. And this animal is set to be executed. You don't need 23 judges like the Tanakhama says. But if that's the case, V'isuri Hanoninu, then this animal is forbidden to have any benefit from it. Because as the Gemara tells us elsewhere in Perek Shashan Arich and Babukama Memalav and Menalav, that if a person slaughters the shur that should be stoned after the verdict was passed down, it's forbidden to have any benefit from it. So what does it say, whoever kills the animal first is zacha, zacha on what? This animal is supposed to be executed. You can't have any benefit from it, you can't even use the hide. So what merit does the one who killed it, according to Rish Lakish, in his explanation of Rabbi Elazar, have by killing it first? Says the Gemara, my zacha. According to Rish Lakish, what does it mean, Rabbi Elazar, when he says that he merits? It means zacha l'shamayim. He merits for heaven, meaning he did a mitzvah. He did this charitable act by getting rid of this danger to society. That's what he means zacha. But yeah, not the hide, because the hide is going to be aser b'hanah. Says the Gemara, Tanika v'sid Rish Lakish, we're learning the Brisa like Rish Lakish. Brisa says, echad shor shehemis. Whether it's an ox that killed a person, which is the halacha of Shur HaNiskol. Ve'echad behim v'chayi shemi, so whether a different domesticated or wild animal kills a person, the halacha says the Tanakhama is b'chavkim, like we said in the Mishnah, requires 23 judges. Rabbi Eliezer Eimer, who that's the opinion that Rosh Lakish and Yechin disagree regarding, he says, as it's quoted in the Brisa, Shur Shehemis, an ox that kills, is be'esem eshleisha. That, the Shur HaNiskol, that requires, as we compare to Kach, just like the way the owner is killed, so too is Kemisa Zabam, Kemisa Sashar. It requires 23 judges. But Vishar Behemah V'chayi Shemisa, says Rabbi Eliezer, but regarding other animals or wild animals that kill, whoever kills them first merits for heaven. So you see clearly, like Rish Lakish's interpretation, not that Zacha La'oyri, like Rabbi Yechanan, because you can't, because it's forbidden to have benefit. It already killed, it should be executed. Rather, it's merits that he has up there in heaven. The Mishnah continued, it said, Rabbi Kiva Omer, he says that Chulu, etc., that you need to have 23 judges for the execution of this wild animal. So the Gemara asked Rabbi Kiva and the Tanakhama, so he's the same as the Tanakhama. We had the Tanakhama says you need 23. Then we had the opinion that says that, no, Rabbi Eliezer says whoever comes first serve. And then Rabbi Kiva says you need 23, so it's the same as Tanakhama. So the Gemara, ikebe nayu nachash. The difference between them is regarding a snake. In other words, the Tanakhama put it all in one category and said for all those wild animals, you need 23 judges. Rabbi Kiva, regarding all the other wild animals, yeah, agrees to the Tanakhama, except for the snake. As the Gemara says in Arba Avis on Baba Kama Tezvav Mabez, that Nachash Mu'ud La'olam Devi Hakal. Everyone agrees that a snake is always ready to pounce and cause danger and harm. And therefore, it's regarding that case, Rabbi Kiva disagrees, and he says, there you'll say Kalakayim Zacha. There he disagrees. There you don't have to have 23 judges. You're right. For everything else, he agrees with the Tanakhama, but it's in that case of Nachash that he disagrees, and that's what he holds, that there you don't need to have 23 judges.